Our guest this hour was 18 years old when she had her first grand mal epileptic seizure. In the following years, she worked her way through medical school, got married, had three children, all while navigating increasingly regular epileptic seizures. In her new book, a memoir, she shares insights from that journey in which she hopes will help others and raise awareness of epilepsy. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We will talk with Dr. Kristen Seaborg, who is a practicing pediatrician in Madison, Wisconsin, and the author of The Sacred Disease, My Life with Epilepsy. And we will welcome your questions for her and perhaps your own experiences. Do you or does someone you know have epilepsy? How does it affect your or their life? How do you navigate life with epilepsy? What questions do you have? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Dr. Kristen Seaborg is a pediatrician in Madison, Wisconsin. She writes a blog about epilepsy at 1in26.com, and she is the author of The Sacred Disease, My Life with Epilepsy. You can catch her at Mystery to Me Bookstore in Madison on Thursday, December 10th at 7 p.m. She is donating all of the profits from the sales of the book to CURE, Citizens United for Research in Epilepsy. And she joins us in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for being with us. My first question is, why do you call your life with epilepsy? Why is epilepsy the sacred disease?
So in 400 BC, Hippocrates, who is the father of medicine, actually was way ahead of his time. At the time, a lot of people that lived with epilepsy or knew somebody with epilepsy thought that it was a curse or something, a divine punishment for sinners. And Hippocrates wrote this text called On the Sacred Disease in 400 BC. And for the first time, he actually wrote about epilepsy as a brain disorder, something that was actually happening physiologically as opposed to a curse. So the title of my book is kind of an homage to one of the first people who tried to dispel the stigma.
Yeah, and he was right. That's what epilepsy is.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us exactly what is going on. What is epilepsy?
So epilepsy is a wide spectrum of disorders, but at the very base, it's abnormal electrical activity in the brain that leads to at least one or more unprovoked seizures. Seizures can occur when children have a fever, which is completely benign. They can occur at other times, but when there's an established pattern, you receive a diagnosis of epilepsy.
What causes it?
There's a variety of causes. That's actually, if you could answer that question, you'd be on the beach somewhere.
Yeah.
Genetic disorders can cause epilepsy. Traumatic brain injury can cause epilepsy. In my case, a prolonged seizure with a fever as a very young infant caused my epilepsy. So there's a whole bunch of reasons.
How common is it? It's 1 in 26?
It's extraordinarily common. I think, so part of the reason why I wrote this book is because a lot of people think that epilepsy isn't common. 1 in 26 people will be diagnosed with epilepsy in their lifetime. 3 million Americans live with epilepsy. 65 million people worldwide live with epilepsy. So if you're sitting in a classroom with a bunch of other science kids in your high school, probably one of those kids has epilepsy.
Yeah, I mentioned before we went on the air, I have a niece who has epilepsy, and I know friends who have children who have epilepsy. You mentioned that you had a seizure as an infant when you had a fever. I must have misread. I thought you had maybe it was your first grand mal when you're 18.
Right, so I had what's called an atypical febrile seizure as a young infant. I had influenza A and had a very high fever, and probably because something in my genetics or my brain structure, who knows, what should have been a simple febrile seizure lasted for an hour. And when that happens for that long of a time period, certain deep portions in your brain start to lose blood flow. And so that is the theory that caused a scar that later was a source of my seizures.
I see. And but that must have been well, frightening for your parents, for sure, but also frightening for you. Tell us what it was like learning that you had epilepsy.
Sure. So I don't remember. I was 18 months old. My mom still really has a hard time talking about the whole thing because this hour-long seizure led to 2 weeks in the hospital with a tube down my throat and a lot of uncertainty. I was on anti-epileptic medication until I was 5 as a preventative measure. But then at 5, I had a EEG or a test of my brain waves, and everything looked good. I was taken off the medicine, and we kind of packed that in away in the memory of things that we didn't want to remember. And we moved on. And then when I was 14, I started having these weird events that now I know were complex partial seizures. But at the time, I really couldn't describe to anybody. And I had those monthly for about 4 years until I finally had that grand mal seizure in high school.
So how does one tell if, I mean, is the seizure is the primary symptom of somebody that has epilepsy?
Yes, but it's hard to discern. A lot of people who may or may not be familiar with epilepsy think of a seizure as falling to the ground and body shaking and you're not conscious. But the reality for me and a lot of people is that the seizure that I have is actually very, very subtle. I might smack my lips. I might look off in the distance. I might kind of clench my hand. And I tell a lot of people, my husband would know, but really nobody else would. And then there's a chance that small seizure can go on to the larger seizure, but that doesn't happen very often for me, luckily.
And what is the typical treatment of someone who has epilepsy once it's discovered?
So there's a variety of treatments. The most common treatment is medication. There's a large handful of medications that can be used for seizures. And there's active research trying to target certain medications to certain seizure types and to treating that effectively. I was actually one of the lucky ones. I had a defined scar in my brain that could be removed by surgery. So surgery is considered to be a treatment for epilepsy. And then there's other kind of more non-traditional but somewhat successful treatments like different dietary therapies. The ketogenic diet promotes a lot of fat in the diet, and then that's actually been shown to decrease seizure frequency as well.
I was going to get to your surgery. So there was a scar or a lesion on the brain, but first you had to go through various medications to see if that was going to take care of your seizures.
Yes. The first time I met my neurologist here at the University of Wisconsin, I told him my story, and he looked at me and he said, "Well, you know what? You're going to think I'm crazy, but I think you need surgery." And I kind of I was taken aback because I was a high school senior, or excuse me, a college senior about to go to medical school at the time. And that really scared me. And then so I thought about it for a while and I talked to some other physicians. And one of them ended up saying, "Well, you should try more medications before you consider it. It's such a big surgery." So I did. I spun the medication roulette and tried a variety of different medications, all of which worked for a very short while, but in the end didn't work. And so I was defined a surgical candidate. And sure enough, I had the surgery.
Yeah. And since then?
I had the surgery in 2003 when I was a pediatric resident. I was in the second year of my residency. Surgery was like uneventful. There were no complications. I went home. I was doing well. And 5 months later, the seizures came back.
So you are still treating with medications now?
I still take 2 medications.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do the medications and post-surgery... you have fewer seizures when you're on medications, or do you still have them?
Yes and yes. Yeah. I have fewer seizures after the surgery. Now they're almost exclusively at night, which is annoying to me, but really doesn't affect the rest of my life. But I still do have them. About once a month, I can predict it on my hormonal cycle when they'll happen.
Interesting. But they're not the grand mal.
They're not the grand mal. They're those subtle ones with lip smacking and hand clenching, and then I feel tired and headachy for a little while afterwards, but I can go on with my day.
Yeah. We are talking with Dr. Kristen Seaborg. She is a pediatrician, and she is the author of a new memoir, The Sacred Disease, My Life with Epilepsy, and that's what we're talking about, her life with epilepsy and perhaps yours or someone you know. If you have a question about epilepsy, call us, or an experience that you would like to share, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let's go to the phones. We have Dennis in Milwaukee. Hello, Dennis.
Hi.
Yes, go ahead. I understand that your wife and your daughter have epilepsy?
No, my wife have grandma epilepsy. She was diagnosed with it back when she was 9 years old. She is now currently 25. Her father has epilepsy, and her father's mom has grandma epilepsy, who actually died from it, from falling down the stairs and having a seizure. Just recently, about over a month ago, we have a daughter that was born back in June of this year. A week after she was born, my wife, while at work, was holding the baby, and she had a seizure, dropped the baby, went into an episode, and had to be rushed. But recently, she just had like 8 to 10 episodes in within 3 hours of a period all at once, and it was critically that they had to put her in the ICU because she wasn't breathing. As she was in there on the EKG, and the doctor was monitoring her as she was having a seizure, it wasn't coming up on the EKG. And the doctor was putting his hand over her face to see if this was a real episode or not. And she was, like, swatting the hand away from her face. So the doctor was trying to tell us that this could be a tantrum that usually kids go through. And when you're a kid, if you see someone with a seizure, thinking that will be a reaction from a behavioral mental thing that will cause her to have seizures. And she built this up over time that every time that she throws a tantrum, she goes into a seizure. But for the last 3 years I've been with her, these seizures look really horrible. I mean,
Dennis, I don't mean to interrupt, but I got a little confused there. So it is your wife who's having the seizure, not your daughter?
Correct.
Okay, I apologize for confusing that to begin with, but it sounded like I heard about tantrums and seizures, so I thought again we were talking about the daughter. But let me you bring up a lot of different points that I'd like Dr. Seaborg to address. He mentioned that his wife is not the only one in her family to have epilepsy. Is there a genetic a link?
Absolutely. And that goes back to there's more than one genetic link. There's a variety of genetic links, but it's not uncommon to travel through families.
Yeah. And it can be fatal.
SUDEP, sudden unexpected death in epilepsy, kills 50,000 people a year. It's unbelievable, the statistics. And actually, sudden death in epilepsy is a cause of 1/3 of pediatric deaths yearly.
Do you have any comment on the story about the epileptic seizure not showing up on the EKG?
There is something called non-epileptic seizure that is something that is either behavioral or related to something going on inside, kind of in your brain, or a learned behavior that is a documented and a real phenomenon.
And I was confused by the tantrum behavior and seizures. Did you understand that?
Dennis's explanation made sense to me. This sounds like something that his wife has witnessed since she was a small child, and it's probably something that has become so much of a part of her that even though there's not an electrographic correlate, perhaps it's something that how she reacts to stress.
Mm-hmm. You know, Dennis mentioned that his wife was, I think, holding his daughter when she had a seizure. Mm-hmm. You were living with epilepsy and seizures when you were raising your children as well. In fact, you talk about in your memoir. When you were you were going to give birth to your, was it your second child?
Yes.
Tell us about that. I mean, that was you went into labor and you had a seizure at the same time.
Pretty close. Yeah. So the night before my second son was born, I told you that my seizures tend to happen when I'm hormonal. They also happen when I'm stressed or when I'm tired, and that trifecta is, you know, right before you're about to give birth. So we had some friends over for dinner. I was going to go to the hospital for induction the next day, and I walked out to put the trash out on the driveway, and that's about as much as I remember. I remember a small seizure starting, and then my husband caught me before I fell to the ground with a grand mal seizure. And really, that's always been my worst fear. When I woke up, I was kind of not really aware of what was going on, as I never am for a little while. But the first thing I felt after I realized where I was the baby kicking, which was incredibly reassuring.
Oh, yeah. But did you question yourself? Did you live with some fear that your condition was going to be hazardous to your children?
Absolutely. All the time. I watched them like a hawk. And in the end, I've been asked that question before. It comes around to, I'm not going to let epilepsy define who I am or what I do. I will be as cautious and as careful as I can be, but I'm still going to move forward. We've been blessed with three healthy, wonderful children who, despite the fact that I had seizures when I was pregnant, somehow are unscathed and perfect. And I'm hoping that it will never affect them.
We are talking about living with epilepsy with Dr. Kristen Seaborg, practicing pediatrician in Madison. She writes the blog about epilepsy called 1in26.com and is the author of The Sacred Disease, My Life with Epilepsy. If you have a question for her or an experience you'd like to share, 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Do you or does someone you know have epilepsy? How does it affect you or their life, your or their life? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest is Dr. Kristen Seaborg, a practicing pediatrician in Madison, Wisconsin, author of the memoir, The Sacred Disease, My Life with Epilepsy. Dr. Seaborg, do you, in your practice, deal with the children who have epilepsy?
Absolutely. I care for patients with seizures. It is not, my specialty is not neurology, so I am not their primary epilepsy care specialist. But yes, I do care for them in the context of their overall health and chronic disease.
Yeah. I mentioned that I do have some friends whose children have epilepsy. Some of them also have children who are on the autism spectrum. Is there a connection between epilepsy and autism?
We don't think there's a causation. Autism causes epilepsy or epilepsy causes autism, but there certainly is a correlation. I've had some of my patients in my primary care practice, when they receive their autism diagnosis, be warned by the developmental psychologist that, just so you know, there's an increased association with autism and seizures. The link and the correlation is not 100% defined, but we know it's there.
Back to the phones we go, and Marilyn in Maguanago is with us. Hello, Marilyn.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to comment on a couple of things. First of all, I am 62. I had my first grand mal seizure at 13, and I wanted to comment on what you said about it being a hormonal, there being a hormonal connection. When I had my, and I've always had grand mal seizures, when I had my first seizure at 13, it was the year I started menstruating. Mm-hmm. And the neurologist that I saw said to me, it's very, because I said, what causes this? And my mother was with me, and we were like, why did this happen? She said, it's very possible that because you started menstruating, it triggered something, and this is what triggered the seizure. And I said, when's it going to end? And she said, again, it's very possible when you go through menopause, mm-hmm. it will go away. I started menopause 12 years ago. I haven't had a seizure in 10 years.
Oh, my goodness.
That's good news.
I will also say that having children, I have two wonderful children, very healthy, and with my first child, in the middle of labor, I had a grand mal seizure. Mm. So I went through that experience. The third thing I'm going to say is I have not let this define me either.
Good for you.
This is something that I feel I'm blessed with. If anyone has questions, they know they can come to me. I'll tell them my experience and that it is not as bad as some people think.
Absolutely.
I have always felt very blessed that this is all that I have.
Mm-hmm.
It's given me a new understanding for people who have chronic long-term diseases. But the hormonal aspect of it is very interesting to me, and I firmly believe I know I will have no more seizures in my life.
So, I mean, is her epilepsy over, Dr. Seaborg?
We'll see, right? I certainly hope so for you. The one thing I want to clarify that I said, my seizures are certainly associated with hormones, but it's not the true cause of the seizures. Like, there's something going on in my brain, too, which I imagine is the case with you, too. Congratulations on not letting seizures define you. On the blog I wrote, or 1 in 26, I've actually talked to a lot of people who, when they received their diagnosis of epilepsy, it started off with a list they couldn't do. And I think that's kind of a sad way to look at a chronic disease. And I think that it's awesome for all of us who are able to work through it.
Yeah. So do women have epilepsy more than men?
I don't think so.
Yeah,
I can't
so
tell
not,
you for it, certainty.
Right. I mean, but in terms of the demographics, this is a condition, a disease that affects both
that
genders.
Affects both. And there are a bunch of different seizure triggers or things that will lower your seizure threshold. For me, I know that's hormones. I know it's sleep, and I know it's alcohol. I've heard from other people it's Diet Coke and it's caffeine and it's emotional stress. There's a whole variety of triggers.
Yeah. And it is your hope that your book will raise awareness and also reduce the stigma.
Absolutely. One of the reasons why I started writing is I work in the medical community, and I would come across people that I worked with, really well-renowned physicians, nurses, and medical staff, who, if I said anything about seizures or epilepsy or medications, they'd very quickly become very uncomfortable. They'd look down. They'd kind of change the subject. One supervisor at one time told me that I must not talk about or ever mention seizures in the workplace. And I think that's really tragic, because if the disease I had or the illness I had was diabetes or asthma or even cancer, that wouldn't come up. But this stigma is very large, and it remains.
Yeah, that's interesting, because what about your patients? Do they know, and does it trouble them in any way?
My patients really don't know, well, until now, right? Because wrote everything on paper for two reasons. One, because I've realized that kind of my silence the stigma has become part of me now, too. By being quiet about the disease, I'm almost promoting that it's okay not to talk about it. And two, the one or two patients that I did tell, usually in the context of their child being diagnosed with epilepsy, I also noted that discomfort and the awkwardness. And perhaps it was because they knew a little too much about me, or perhaps it was because they weren't sure they could trust their physician anymore.
But people have epilepsy in all sorts of different professions, so you're here to say I can still be your pediatrician.
I can still be your pediatrician. I had somebody post on a Facebook page when there was promotion of the book, I didn't think doctors could be, I didn't think people with epilepsy could be doctors. And I was upset by that, because what I wanted to respond is, that's exactly why I'm writing this book. If we start our sentences with, I don't think you can do this because you're epileptic, I think that just perpetuates the stigma that is there.
1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Many more callers, but does having epilepsy limit you in any way? I mean, I've heard of people who, for example, are not able to drive because mm-hmm. they have epilepsy.
So, yes, at portions during my life, especially after grand mal seizures, I have not been able to drive, which is infuriating, because then you're dependent on other people, and I completely sympathize with those of us that can't drive all the time. For the most banal thing, it limits me. I don't drink alcohol, which only is fun or not fun if I'm at a large party with a lot of people. And I really have to monitor my sleep very closely. I get in this kind of thought pattern that if I'm overtired, then I worry about having a seizure, and I worry about having more seizures. So it's there all the time with me.
Our next caller is Alma in Milwaukee. Hello.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning.
My question is, let me start with, I have four brothers that have epilepsy, but they've lived normal lives. They're all adults now. And epilepsy was very common in my mother's side of the family. So, and this started when they were infants, remembering, you know, their seizures. However, my question is, I don't have epilepsy. My four brothers do. I'm just wondering if there's a correlation between mental illness and epilepsy, since I have suffered from different types of mood disorders and, you know, due to traumas. But I'm just wondering if there's a link between.
Interesting. So you don't have epilepsy. You don't have a diagnosis of epilepsy, but you do have some depression and mental health issues. Alma, is that and you're wondering?
Yes.
Yeah. Is there a connection there, Herbert?
So, like autism, we think there is a correlation or maybe even a causation. They've studied people with chronic seizures and epilepsy and shown that they are more prone to depression and anxiety. Whether or not the pathologic process that starts either mental illness or epilepsy is the same, I can't comment on that because I don't know.
Interesting, though, that her four brothers have epilepsy and she does not, or at least. So is there, is there some sort of blood test? Is there some sort of, a neurological test that says you have it or you don't?
There is no blood test. Although they are working on developing blood tests that if you know a specific genetic defect, you could find that in the blood. That doesn't exist yet. The EEG is the gold standard test for determining if a patient has epilepsy, which is putting electrodes on the head and doing a recording of the brain waves.
And is that, if Alma said she hasn't been diagnosed with epilepsy, could she indeed have it and not know it?
That's a good question. I think Alma would know it.
Yeah.
I think that she would have some atypical episodes or have these weird things where she feels unusual. And I expect that with her family history, she's talked to her doctor about it, and her doctor's been very careful to monitor her for symptoms.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Alma, for the call. Let's go to Laura in Grand Marsh. Hello, Laura.
Hello. My situation, I'm 68 years old now, but in 2000 I was diagnosed with a brain tumor. Before I had the surgery, I first tried radiation, but then before I had the surgery, I ended up with a six-hour grand mal seizure and in the hospital and ended up with double vision and could hardly walk, and then they finally took out the brain tumor. But anyhow, what I'm dealing with right now is I've have these situations where, to me, they're seizures in the sense that I can't speak and I'm shaking. Mm. And yet I've been on a 48-hour monitor twice, and they've told me that there's no abnormal brain waves. So what could something like this be? And I sure wish that this doctor was my doctor.
Aww, yeah. Thank you.
I certainly would love to have someone that has gone through the same thing and could really empathize with what a person who goes through this is dealing with, because I am now changing doctors because my doctor doesn't even seem curious about what's going on with me.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Laura. So she has seizure-like symptoms, but I guess she's being told they're really not seizures.
Sure, and unfortunately, this isn't my field of expertise, but just like the caller earlier this morning, Dennis had mentioned with another family member, there is a phenomenon of non-epileptogenic seizures, so seizure-like activity that's not orienting in the brain, which could be related to a variety of other factors. That's a possibility. Another possibility is they've done the EEG but haven't caught it on the EEG, or there's a whole multitude of other things that could be going on.
What is the... there was a brain tumor involved in Laura's situation.
And brain tumors definitely can be associated with seizures, just because it upsets the electrical network in the brain. With the removal of the tumor, she would be less likely to have seizures, but perhaps more likely than just anybody on the street.
Yeah. Laura had epilepsy and she had a brain tumor. Is that what? It's not that she had a brain tumor and that was what that was causing the seizures, then that's not epilepsy.
Yeah, good question. without being there, without taking care of, I don't know. But my estimation or guess would be that Laura had a brain tumor, which is extraordinarily unfortunate, and the seizures were a cause of the brain tumor,
or were
there because of the brain tumor.
We are talking with Dr. Kristen Seaborg. She is a pediatrician, and she is the author of the memoir, The Sacred Disease, My Life with Epilepsy. And we are talking about her life with epilepsy, and she is answering your questions about epilepsy at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Dr. Kristen Seaborg, who is the author of The Sacred Disease, My Life with Epilepsy. She will be at the Mystery to Me bookstore in Madison on Thursday, December 10th at 7 p.m., if you would like to catch her there. She is, by the way, donating all the profits from the sales of the book to CURE, Citizens United for Research in Epilepsy. And Dr. Seaborg, I did want to talk to you about research. I mean, I believe we've come a long way in knowing more about epilepsy since, for instance, my niece 50 years ago, when I first discovered she had epilepsy, and I think I told you that I witnessed one of her seizures, and it was very frightening, and the paramedic put a pencil or a pen in her mouth. And I was told it was so she wouldn't swallow her tongue. And apparently that you don't do that anymore.
Right. So we've both come a long way, and we have a long way to go. Yes, I hope that in the last 50 years we've learned that patients during a seizure certainly cannot swallow their tongue. And it's actually quite dangerous to put something in their mouth, although the paramedic at the time was doing the recommended treatment. Now we know that if a patient is having a grand mal seizure, the best thing to do is to remove sharp objects from the area, make sure they're in a safe place. Don't try to stop the seizing or the convulsing, and call the paramedics, especially if the seizure's gone on for longer than 5 minutes.
She was treated with some sort of anti-seizure medication. I remember it being very powerful. Mm-hmm. And, from a child's point of view, it knocked her out.
Right. So do you mean when she was having the seizure?
Well, no, when she was went to prevent the seizures, apparently.
So that's where we have a long way to go. Well, there have been multiple new anti-epileptic medications that have come on the chart, for use. A lot of them still are not 100% effective and still are associated with significant side effects. Kind of in my journey through this, I've tried multiple medications, and each time I try a new one, I know I'm going to feel very tired, I'm going to feel nauseous or dizzy, and eventually that goes away, but it's really kind of momentous to start a new medicine. So a lot of the research being done now is to explore alternative therapies, to explore things like actually optogenetics, stimulating parts of the brain that are known for seizures with a very small light source, which is kind of cool, deep brain stimulation to kind of stop the seizures at the source, or to find very specific medications that will target the very specific pathways in the brain that are misfiring before the seizure starts or before it starts to affect the patient.
That sounds promising. Let's go to Kay in Madison now. Hello, Kay.
Yes, hi. I don't believe anybody's talked about the stress on the family.
Mm-hmm.
My sister has periodic seizures, and I have witnessed grand mal, but I think the other ones that they call petit mal or...
complex partial or partial.
Absence, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And she has had accidents while driving. Mm. And so then, fortunately, she hasn't been hurt or no one else has been, but caused quite a bit of damage to her car. And then she can't drive till she's 3 months seizure free.
Right.
And so it falls on me to get her to work a lot of the time so that she doesn't lose her job.
Mm-hmm.
Cabs and buses don't always work, at least not with her work schedule. So I love her a lot, but it is stressful on me when that happens.
Yeah, it can be. I imagine it can be stressful on Kay or families in general.
I feel like I should drag my husband in here to answer this question, because you're absolutely right. He mentions how stressful it is to watch me having a seizure. And you're also right, during the periods when I couldn't drive, I pulled on friends and family and extended family and anybody that could help me get to where I needed to be. And I think that's part of the undocumented affects that epilepsy has on the whole community. 1 in 26 people have it, but even more of us are affected by it indirectly. So more reason to seek a cure.
Yeah. Do you have any, I don't know, just, you know, I guess you're saying, yeah, your husband is the one with that, but you mentioned, you know, what we should do if we witness somebody having a seizure. Mm-hmm. I mean, is there just some general advice that you might have for people who are living with somebody who is living with epilepsy?
Sure. So do you mean when they're having a seizure?
Both, yeah.
If you witness somebody having a seizure, again, I'd just make sure they were in a safe place, and make sure they couldn't fall or hurt themselves or, you know, or, you know, knock their head on something dangerous or something like that. Make no attempt to stop the convulsing. Please don't put anything in their mouth. Nobody's going to swallow their mm-hmm. tongue. And then just calling for help is a good idea.
Yeah. That's, I don't know if, I'm not sure I know how to, OCL. OCL in Janesville? Hi.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, well, just want to share this story. My dad lives in Mexico City. So I remember when I was 10 years old, we were just walking anywhere, and then in one moment, he started suffering, I mean, having those convulsions because mm-hmm. of the epilepsy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that affects my life in a point where first you didn't know what to do mm-hmm. until they told you, I mean, what you could do to help them, you know. I remember tried to grab him, and so he didn't fall. Tried to put my hand or something in her mouth so he didn't swallow his tongue or bite it, you know.
Right, and mm-hmm. that was sort of the outdated thing now. Mm-hmm. He wasn't going to do that. But OCL, thank you very much. Maybe can we talk a little bit about children who mm-hmm. are living with somebody who's living with epilepsy? How do you explain this to them or make sure they understand what's going on?
Sure. So with my own children, mm-hmm. Honestly, I've tried to keep it away from them as much as possible because I know how much it will scare them. But as they've grown older, I've tried to talk to them in the most honest and simple terms as I can. If mommy has a seizure, it's not in my control. I know it might look scary, but, you know, go find somebody else or call daddy or call somebody to help you. And I've also tried to, because I feel like kids do really well when they understand and when you're honest with them, I've tried to kind of explain to them, you know, there's some different electricity going on in mommy's brain. And at the very basic level, they understand that it's not something I'm keeping from them or I'm hiding from them, but they're part of it too.
Yeah. Is epilepsy generally on the rise or decline, or is it static? I mean, do we know?
I don't think we know 100%. I think that as we research more and more and we find out more and more, we found that there's more and more epilepsy. The statistic to me that is actually extraordinarily overwhelming is the rising incidence of epilepsy in veterans. 2.2 million people served in Iraq and Afghanistan. Of those, about 400,000 of them will have a traumatic brain injury, and 100,000, or one quarter of those patients, are expected to develop post-traumatic epilepsy. So 100,000 people coming back from the Iraq and Afghanistan wars are expected to develop epilepsy.
Wow.
Yeah. So in that sense, it is increasing.
So, boy, so you can develop epilepsy from a brain injury.
Absolutely.
It's not just a neurological disorder that you're born with.
No. You can develop it from a traumatic brain injury, most commonly the penetrating brain injuries. And there's some association with particularly bad concussions and seizures.
Is epilepsy well, preventable, I suppose. If you don't get a traumatic brain injury, mm-hmm. but is there any other way to prevent epilepsy?
Goodness.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Okay, yeah.
I don't even want to speculate because I don't want to misspeak on that one.
Maddie in Wapaka is with us. Hello, Maddie.
Hi. I wondered if you had ever encountered a situation like my grandson. He's 14 years old. Mm-hmm. When he was infant, he was diagnosed at Children's Hospital in Milwaukee with mild cerebral palsy mm-hmm. because when he was born, the cord was wrapped around his neck. Mm-hmm. But when he was about four or four and a half, he had a flu shot, and within 3 weeks, his IQ plummeted to that of a two-year-old and has never returned. He was then diagnosed with autism, and after the diagnosis, like a couple years later, he started to have epilepsy seizures.
Mm. Maddie, I'm going to jump in because I want to, there is science that we need to, I think, touch on here. Maddie is concerned, and perhaps her family is concerned, that her grandson developed the autism and the epilepsy after a flu vaccination.
So, Maddie, I'm terribly sorry for your son. I think there's no association with the flu shot and the development of autism and epilepsy. And in fact, I feel like the multiple studies have proven that that's not the case. The very interesting part of your story, and more likely the root of the problems, is that event at birth that probably caused decreased blood flow to his brain, which resulted in cerebral palsy and probably resulted in autistic spectrum features and perhaps epilepsy.
Yeah, Maddie, and I'm so sorry for what your grandson is going through. Let's go to Alex in Madison. Hello, Alex.
Hi. So as you had said, there is some different electricity happening in the brain of a person with epilepsy. My father had epilepsy, and I'm wondering if there's any research or any connection between epilepsy and maybe an impact that a person could have on electrical things in their vicinity. My father would famously short out lights and remote controls and things like that. It was kind of a joke.
Mm-hmm.
We thought of him as sort of our gremlin, and...
I'm not sure that exists.
You know, I know maybe it doesn't exist, but I'm one of those people, Alex, that when I put I don't wear them anymore. Every single time I put a watch on, it just went went wild and wouldn't keep time. And we kind of had a little, you know, my husband and I joke that I must have some sort of electrical impulses that are causing that. But it has nothing to do with
not that I've ever read or heard about.
Yeah. So, anyway, thank you very much, Alex. So there's no connection between epilepsy and electronics.
And electronics that we know of, no.
All right, let's go next to Jennifer in Fond du Lac. Hello, Jennifer.
Hi, good morning, and thank you so much for this program, fabulous program. I was diagnosed with epilepsy when I was a child, mm-hmm. probably in my early teens. I am now 65, and I really haven't had any seizures for probably 40 years, but I'm wondering is there some indication of a childhood epilepsy or something happens early on and then you grow out of it?
Yeah, there are actually several syndromes that are considered just during childhood and are benign and people grow out of them. So there's benign Rolandic epilepsy of childhood and juvenile myoclonic epilepsy, and both of these are benign, and children tend to grow out and have no long-term effects or epilepsy as adults.
And then the second part of that question, are there other, you know, if the seizure component of epilepsy, you know, is no longer, are there other things that could play out throughout your life? That's really good information. Thank you. I've often wondered that. 40 years I've wondered that.
Yeah.
Nice. Your second question is a much harder one. There is some evidence to suggest that recurrent severe seizures, especially in a developing brain, can affect cognition, but those are recurrent, severe, and multiple during childhood. So if you had them every once in a while, but really not that often, and now you're completely free from seizures, I wouldn't expect any adverse effects.
Yeah. Chris emails, I had a friend in college at the UW with epilepsy. She was extremely embarrassed and sensitive about the disease. When she felt an episode coming on, she would lock herself in her dorm room so none of us could get in. But a couple of times, we did have to call the ambulance. Mm-hmm. It was always so nerve-wracking, worrying about her. How are we helping young people to understand that there is no reason for them to be embarrassed by this condition and they need to let people in?
Oh my goodness, you just kind of summarized what I'm hoping to do with my book and by talking about this. You described me as a college student. I wrote in the book that every time I felt an episode coming, I'd find a quiet corner where I could face the wall and wait it out so nobody else would know. What are we doing? What do we need to do? We need to talk about seizures more. We need to destigmatize seizures, and we need to normalize it. There's a spectrum of disorders. There's a variety of different things, but seizures are incredibly common. So the more you can talk to your friend, too, about, hey, I know this person who has epilepsy, and I know a doctor, and I know a lawyer, and I know a web designer, it normalizes it.
Let's go to Giselle in Milwaukee. Hello.
Hi there. When I tuned into the this show here that you're having, I thought you guys were going to be talking or touching about medical marijuana for epilepsy. I've seen several documentaries on CNN that show, you know, that it works. So I don't know if doctor here has ever tried medical marijuana or heard about. Or what can she say to that?
Do you know, I know about as much as you do about medical marijuana. I've seen the documentaries on CNN. I've seen some promising evidence that it can be helpful to people with severe seizures. I do not qualify for medical marijuana. I think it's a hopeful thing that we need to do more research on.
Yeah. Thank you very much for the call. We had a caller who dropped off who wanted to talk about dogs being trained to detect seizures and getting their owners help. Mm-hmm. Do you know about this?
I do. It's super cool. Dogs, they have that sixth sense that humans don't. And there is some suggestion that for people with grand mal seizures, dogs can actually tell that they're coming. So patients with severe grand mal seizures actually may qualify for a seizure detection dog. And then that dog would keep them company and keep them safe and then go find some help if needed.
Well, boy, this went fast. We're almost out of time. What encouragement do you have for people who are perhaps going through a similar situation as you?
So I would actually encourage patients, especially anybody newly diagnosed or struggling, to look at the CURE website, www.cureepilepsy.org. CURE is a nonprofit organization, non-governmental, funded for research in epilepsy. So while some of the organizations or people I've talked to with epilepsy sometimes are a little bit, they make me feel sad and down because we talk about the limitations, CURE talks about what we can achieve. And that's a great source of hope for me.
Well, thank you so much for being here. Mm-hmm. Dr. Kristen Seaborg, practicing pediatrician, author of The Sacred Disease, My Life with Epilepsy. She's donating all the profits from the sales of the book to CURE, Citizens United for Research in Epilepsy. And she will be at a book reading, book signing at Mystery to Me Bookstore in Madison on Thursday, December 10th at 7 p.m. Thanks to Marika Suval for producing this program. Thanks to Christy Taylor for on-air direction and to Elizabeth Delaquest for on-air production. Thank you for listening. Tomorrow at this time, we'll talk with a psychologist about ways to heal family relationships, especially between parents and their adult children. That's tomorrow at this time. This is the Ideas Network.